no.
Would you rent this spot?
My homegirl, she owns the space. Oh, oops.
Sorry, Walden, but I feel like because did the DJ documentary, like I had to make the L fade out. How was that? So that was Walden Ravine. Heard it all before, and it's in a spontaneous reaction. Got a guest, Derek Pridgen. We there?
Yeah, thank
AKA
you,
DP. No, don't do that shit. Don't do that. Thank you very much. We chilling. And so, DP, tell me a story.
My story is about myself and Jam Master Jay. We had actually just got back from L.A. God bless, R.I.P. Jam Master Jay, a.k.a. Jason Mizell, a.k.a. Jam Master Jay. We had got back from L.A. We were shopping a couple of films, some scripts I had written. So a woman in the airport at Kennedy recognized Jay. And her kids came, they were picking her up, and they recognized Jay, but she got Jay's name wrong.
What year was this?
2000.
Okay.
So Jay said, "Miss, I'm gonna sign your hat." She had a hat. "If you can tell me my name, because that's not fair." So her kids started humming and singing, "It's Like That, and That's the Way It Is." So she was like, she was an older woman. She had to be about 50, white woman, Sarah something. So she was like,
"We calling 50 older now?"
50 older. Wow!
Don't do that! Don't do that!
I'm 50 now, but that's at the older. Time,
right.
First of all, she was really well dressed. Okay. She had on mad diamonds. Can I say mad at 50? Can I still say use slang? I guess I can use slang.
I use dope and fresh.
Right. Me too. So she said, she started bobbing her head. Her kids were saying, she said, "You're not Russell Simmons because you're too tall and good looking," and we fell out. She said, "You're not Jay." She said, they were going, mom, "That's the way it is." Now, first of all, they were young.
Right.
So for them to recognize Jason and know, because he had the hat on, and she took some steps back and looked at us. She said, "Jam Master Jay."
Wow.
And not just us. All 50 or 60 people that were waiting for the luggage started clapping because they were already staring at us. You know, the carousel.
Right. Right.
And so it was amazing because he was trying not to blush. She's done that a million times.
Right.
But for her to pick it up, because they were singing, "That's the way," they kept. And so I'm like, "All right."
Right.
She stepped back. She took a look back and she said, "Jam Master Jay." And so it was crazy.
What name did she guess first? She didn't say Run, did she?
She said, "You're not Run." No, but she picked up. It was crazy that her two sons knew the song.
Yeah, and they were white sons.
Yeah, but they would, like, one kid the Yankee cap on backwards.
Okay, clearly.
Right, and he was trying to get Jason to smoke a blunt. He was like, "Hey, my dad runs something.
Okay.
I'm going to smoke outside." Right. Jason was like, "Yo, dude, the airport is federal. I'm not smoking no blunt."
Right.
But they were cool and smooth. They got in this big Benz when they came.
Okay.
She was trying to give me a card, and I didn't have a card either because we had just got back from L.A.
So you were with him?
I was with him.
Why were you with him?
I can't remember. I wrote this script called Frank Forever. It's about a young kid from Harlem who is like the toast of everywhere. He's got cousins in Brooklyn and Queens.
Okay.
Like, his family is kind of like the black mob. His mom's is like Queen of Sheba Harlem.
Right.
And one day some guys come to rob the house, the brownstone. And the mother gets killed and he gets grazed by a bullet. All he does all day is watch gangster films.
Okay.
The Godfather, New Jack City, Angels with Dirty Faces, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. And the bullet grazes him.
That's my favorite movie of that genre. With David Dirty Faces.
Yeah.
Love that joint.
So the bullet grazes him, and he wakes up 11 years later. And when he wakes up, he takes on all the personalities of all the gangsters he ever watched. Mm. He's like terrorizing New York. Like, I mean, the police, I mean, he's that cat. But anyway, we went to talk to Lorenz Tate in L.A. about playing
Old Dog.
Frank. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a whole nother story. But so we wind up getting some meetings. We had asked Russell to introduce us to Quincy Jones. And Russell was like, what? Russell was like, slow down, both of y'all. But he said, you know what? I'm not going to hate. He said, because I don't have the film juice yet. So give me some seconds. Because he had already had a couple of people read some scripts of mine. And I hung out with him enough years, you know. But we were excited to come back from L.A. because we had two bites on projects.
Okay. So you're from Uptown.
Right. I'm from the Bronx.
Okay.
But I roamed all over the Bronx my whole life.
But Jam Master Jay is
from Queens.
So what was your history in film before that moment?
Actually,
music.
A friend of mine is an OG. I rocked with his brother for a little while. That wasn't really the move. He happened to catch me one day and asked me, your brother's, we not really rocking. He said, you should have been rocking with me anyway. Mm-hmm. He was the cat in New York, quietly.
You're not talking about film. We're talking about something else. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And so he told me, what happened to your other car? I said, I don't drive that all the time. Just, you know. And he said, you should be rocking with me. And so we started hanging out for about a year. He to be honest, he kind of changed how I moved, and it was little nuances that he pressured me. Mm-hmm. No diamonds. You know, he was just like, so I kind of like disappeared off the radar.
You hung out for a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he said one day
the bell?
On Lenox Avenue.
Is there a bell over there? And this is a phone, bro.
He said one day we were on Lenox Avenue, and he said, you know what? I'm going to write a movie. And I don't know why. And I said, me too. Because I'm a movie junkie.
Okay.
And I went to the Schaumburg Library in Harlem on 135th and Lenox.
Okay.
They had Woolworths was across the street on Lenox. It was, that's how long ago it was. You probably were a kid, like fifth, sixth grade.
What year was this?
94, 5, 6.
I wasn't.
Oh, how old were you? Like 10th grade, 11th grade?
In 96? Yeah. That was second year in college.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I drink a lot of water,
props
bro.
To you. Props to you. So I went and bought a couple of notebooks and some pencils, right? I used to go in Schaumburg Library I would go in when it was light. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had errors to run periodically.
Right.
But I would only answer beeps that were crucial.
Okay.
I would write for hours.
If it was not a 911 on the beep, then it wasn't crucial.
Yeah.
Right.
It was about some paper or something.
Okay.
And so I taught myself to write a script. I had never seen a script, but I said I was going to buy one so I could see. Mm-hmm. But I had so many life experiences, so I thought anyway, that I was able to expand on one story into multiple stories. And I always saw that scripts, stories have two stories, one major linear story and a backstory. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years went by. A guy, super shout out to Charlie Davis. He was managing Mary J. Blige at the time.
Okay.
Right? I forgot who introduced me to him. He and Kirk Woodley. They were managing Mary.
I know that name.
They had just got a deal at RCA for a couple of million.
Okay.
He introduced me to this guy named Julio Caro. Julio was a mastermind. He told me one day, if you should kind of close off everything else you're doing, you can write. You haven't even been to film school. You should, but I wanted to direct already. But I knew, what do I know? So I kept writing, and then a friend of mine named Kim said, "Yo, I work for Jam Master J." I'm like, "Get out of here!" She's like, "I do." One day I happened to be on her block. She called me down the block. Jason came. Mm-hmm. We vibed. I forgot even how we were outside. Actually, I had a new joint. He was like, "Show us."
What did you have?
Because
they don't know, not everyone knows the new joint, because you did the driving sound.
Right, I think at the time, that particular car might have been I think I had my father's car, but it was a brand new Legend Coupe.
Okay.
And nobody had really those at the time. Plus, and we were also driving an Acura Integra. We had, you know, they looked too. But he just was like, I didn't need anything, and that made us friends faster. We ate lunch a few times and kicked it. He started taking me downtown to Def Jam, and he took me to Russell's house. But actually, I met Russell and Leor. I never used to ask for something. Like, they would bring me Russell. Leor actually threw me a few tickets a couple of times. Like, if I'd be outside waiting for Jason, they'd be like, yo, come upstairs.
You know, and then you were a cool dude, or may they have known of you, or
yeah, that's a whole other story too. But then I, you know, this cats that I met, my man rocked with Large Professor,
okay,
and Nas was on his feet, so I met Nas a couple of times. He was real smooth, young cat. He was really about. He was you could tell, even though he didn't really say much, and I didn't either. A few times that I met him, he was about creating, and unfortunately, I kind of had like a bootleg copy of Illmatic, right? Well, let me tell you, dude, I was living it. So I used to, and I'm a wordsmith. I used to, I don't write a little poetry. That shit was like, I knew right then that just like the prototype for MCs is Melly Mel.
Okay.
Right? For the Hovers, the G-Raps, not really Snoop, because Snoop created a lane. Snoop saved hip hop. I'll tell you that later.
Okay, but, we gotta get into that.
But Melly Mel was kind of like the prototype, because he was a little before Rakim and G-Rap. I mean, he's a little older, right? But I knew Nas was a breakthrough, because the shit he was saying, he was Picasso. I was really, everybody was waiting for more albums for Rakim, Rakim, and G-Rap was masterful. So was Kane. Kane is a top three.
Yeah,
people don't realize. He created everything you needed to know in rhymes,
right,
and was smooth about it.
Right.
Kane was serious business.
I think Kane, what was the album? Not Prince of Darkness. That was
Long Live the Kane?
No, I'm talking about where it kind of started, where maybe he shouldn't have
the Madonna joint.
Looks like a job for Kane. One of those albums, it was like,
I don't remember that Kane. That Kane doesn't exist.
He didn't go out.
But the original Kane.
Right.
Was a can crusher.
Right.
He had it on Smash.
Right.
There's no doubt one of the greatest that ever did it. And he made you want to be involved in his records.
Right. What do you mean by that?
When you listen to, like, there are some guys and women, they're rappers, period, who embrace, you following what they're doing. Quiet is kept. The Trick Daddies, LL Cool J's. The Andre 3000s.
Yo, first of all, you get a lot of props for putting Trick Daddy in that conversation.
Now let me tell you why. Trick Daddy is a daddy is a ghetto connoisseur.
Yeah.
Because I he might even be my age, a little older. Some rappers are telling you, they see what you see. That's what made Nas great. To me, Nas and Jay were both. Biggie too. They were MCs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jay was able to break off and be a rapper.
Right.
Nas dabbled in it, but he never wanted to be a rapper. To me, Jay was able to branch off, probably different management teams too, and schemes of thought, you know, modus operandi. But those are the kind of elements that decide if your career gets a life draft or not. And Big kind of had maybe a smash more. The embodiment. Even Pac too. Pac is another one.
Yes.
They're spokespeople. That's what made Nas great. I see what you're going through, and I'm reporting on it for you.
If you can choose one song, because I know what my song is that definitely said, oh yeah, this dude is talking for me. What song would that be? I think I might know what song you may choose, but what song do you think?
You mean of all the rap songs?
Of that Nas and that album. You first popped it in. What song was like, oh yeah, this is it. This is my anthem, or this is...
Probably one of the five greatest rap songs ever. New York State of Mind.
That's the one.
Memory Lane was just as crazy.
Yeah,
that second verse. If you listen, from some friends I have from Germany, I play ball.
Mm-hmm.
My man Hans one time told me, I hit his Pops came from out of the train station. He was just going to meet him to go back to give Hans some money, right?
Mm-hmm.
First time I ever played Illmatic. But Hans knew basketball, the New York Sling. He said, when I come back to the car, I only want to hear that song again. I said, dude, we're driving to Westchester to play ball. I just want to hear that song. That's Nas, right? That's the album.
Right.
I had about 5 copies I had bought fresh. They wasn't even the plastic on. Nice. I left them in the back of the car. When he left to go back to his hotel,
why
2 was missing.
Why do you have 5 copies?
Because I had some friends that just came home, and I was going to see them. They couldn't leave the block.
So you bought 5 bootlegs of Nas?
No. Real copies.
Oh, real joints. Okay.
With the sticker and everything.
Okay.
From the music store on 44th and Broadway.
That's not Virgin.
Huh? Yeah, it might have been Virgin. With the white stickers on them and unwrap them, Illmatic. And I probably bought 10 or 15 copies. Plus, I knew, I wound up knowing Nas a little bit.
Okay.
Actually, I could be wrong, but one time I was coming back. Was it when Big got killed? I'm not sure. My man said, yo, Nas just gave you a shout out on the radio. My man, Movie Derek from Harlem. I didn't hear it, but.
You mean Movie Derek?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, if when I used to see him,
right.
We were cool. Was it my man?
But
I'm not
Movie
gassing.
Derek, was what people calling you at that point?
No. That was just.
Okay.
You know, when I saw him. But it could have been something quick and black. But he was one of those cats that the few times that I rapped with him, yo, he digested information. It was, you don't really have to be talking to him about nothing. Right. We shot I wrote a treatment to his video, One Love, which somebody directed, but I was on the set all day.
Oh, so you wrote the treatment and they said, yeah.
I didn't direct it.
But that was your treatment. That was your
story.
Yeah,
but it didn't pop off the way I wrote it.
But.
Because it was a little extensive. But Nas had a vision.
Your story, you wrote that story.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, but it didn't show the word for word the way I wrote it.
Yeah, they stole the bell. Hold on, y'all.
They know
we got a bell in here, but the bell was stolen by somebody. That's dope. I know that. I know that. Okay. I seen that video once. Like back.
Shout out to Fab Five Freddy. He directed.
Dope. Was that, is that your first treatment that went through?
Short story. Myself and this kid Khan might have been the first pair of bi-coastal LA and New York. We didn't get to direct.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to sign letters of anatomy and you can't. But I wrote so many treatments. Shout out, I haven't seen him, to Bob Stephanie. Russell introduced me to him.
Bill
right. Stephanie. No, is it Bob? Is it,
well, I know this is Bill Stephanie, it's the Stepson Records. It may be Bob.
Yes, Bill Stephanie.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Bill. It was Bill Stephanie.
Okay.
She was gonna kill me. I don't even know if she's speaking to me now, but I cannot think of Kelly's last name.
Kelly's good. Yo, for all the years, first name is good enough.
She's with Sway. She works with Sway.
Okay.
She kind of like schooled me a little bit when I worked with Stepson a little bit.
You work with Stepson Records?
Well, he was letting me write some video treatments.
Trouble Neck Brothers and all that?
Huh?
The Trouble Neck Brothers and all that?
No, it was Miss Jones was there.
Okay.
There was this girl group, a woman's group from, if I told a group, you know them. They kind of blossomed.
But it's like 93, maybe we're talking about 92, 93.
Say it again?
Like 92, 93 we're talking about?
Yeah.
When Stepson came out, I think I was in
high school. It was on West 4th Street somewhere. The office, bro, right over there.
Okay.
But I wrote quite a few video treatments, got paid. They don't always, sometimes the director's like, this is too much. Because as I learned, you have to cut back. Because the dynamic of a music video is about money and time.
Mm-hmm.
Will an artist show up on time? A bunch of elements go into making sure.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people helped me. They kind of groomed me through different processes of learning, nurturing relationships, the Christmas parties. It was a time. Being Jason's man was cool too, because then when people see me with him, even if they see me alone, I will say, you get to shake a lot of hands, right? It was a time. I met Method Man. Then later, he was actually going to make a film of mine. He didn't know it was my script. We were both at ICM, I think, at the time, called Cousin. So it's just like so many.
He did the film that you wrote?
No. I wrote this script called Cousin.
Okay.
About a man who was like the master criminal, or something about me and crime. Mm-hmm. And he's medicated by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Takes these sets of pills every day. It's complicated. Like, they fall. Doop, doop, doop. Mm-hmm. One day, a pill gets stuck. And so the trays don't all stop.
Okay.
Right? And a friend of his, who used to be his man, kind of not doing well, comes back into to his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he starts to revert to who he was, slowly but surely.
He was like a very violent person?
He had a crew. He worked for this team called the Commission. This is before Biggie and Jay. and he gets busy, but because they had kind of not seen him, mm-hmm. it takes him a while to get reacclimated. So people were telling him, why are you dressed like that? You know, but because he's not himself yet. But as he re-emerges, he's serious business. And so they wanted Meth to try that.
Mm. You didn't think that.
But I said if they want to do it, plus they would go buy the script.
Right.
So, I was hungry as a hostage in the Chuck Norris movie. So, I'm like, yeah, go ahead. But I didn't get to see him because it wasn't like, again, it wasn't like Meth was my man. But he was somebody that if you go use a rap.
Oh. That's for the cap. He's the one later.
Oh. If you're going to use a rapper, he was somebody who might take a shot, something like that. The script was right. Deep story.
So, with the Frank story and that story, what were you watching growing up that have you thinking these, like, depraved, criminal, crazy people stories? Guess it's not, that's not regular imagination.
But you know what happened at the time? Hype was getting ready to make Belly.
Okay.
And we had a mutual friend. I didn't even know Nas and them were going to be in it. Mm-hmm. So they put me, this guy who was like, not a guy, but named Alon Levy, who owned Universal at the time. Was the like $3 or $4 billion. A friend of mine worked up there. So he let us use an office and we got Hype up there. And I pitched Frank Forever. But Hype said he wanted to make Belly. We sat, we had lunch, like the 48th floor or something. Mm-hmm. Hype was like, hey, yo, that's dope, but I'm so far into the pre-production, and I'm like, Hype, this, could you imagine? I felt like we never get the stories for Black and Latino. Like, who gets conditioned after watching gangster movies for 20 years that now you wake up and take on the person? This is the kind of joint you get Oscars for.
So also, it's like a political piece.
It was, because he stood for equality in the hood, even though he was he was one of those Robin Hood type gangsters in the film. And I just found a script the other day, too, on my old PC computer.
So, I mean, we all are Frank. A lot of us are Frank and don't even know it, pretty much.
Kind of, yeah. Because when you wake up, whatever it is that snaps you out of a funk or a mental malaise, you start realizing, I can do this better. I can do this different.
Well, I know one time, I never watched The Wire till like, mad later. I didn't have HBO. I bought, like, mad DVDs later on. And one day, I just... I just binged like two seasons in the weekend. I ain't going nowhere. Yo, I came out Monday, and I was living in East Flatbush. I came back, yo, I swear I was in Baltimore. Everybody looked like crazy. So, I could definitely relate to a friend. Thankfully, I realized that with what the show was doing to me. I guess a lot of folks, they let it go into the subconscious, and they just become Frank forever. I'd like to see that one day.
Me too. I still have the script, so I'm excited as I hopefully climb up the directing pole.
Okay.
Because I would have to rewrite it, obviously.
Right.
I think what happened is he started cloning Metro cards. He had a kid who had a digital system that could read and rewrite and plug into New York City's data bank. So his Metro cards were untraceable because the kid married his computer into New York City's transit computer. So it was like a blank. The cards existed, but they didn't exist.
And you wrote this one in 2000 or so?
Yeah, Jason was alive, like 98, 90, but that was one of the joints we went to LA. Okay. The two guys that owned this production company, if I tell you, they made a couple of urban films, but the two twin brothers, we met them at the...
Oh, Hudlin? Hudlin Brothers?
No, not the Hudlin. I know Warrington. Yeah. They're white guys, real cool. Skip and something. Mm-hmm. They own, not Merriman. We met them at the, what's the Super Hotel on Fifth Avenue? Probably the most, one of the most hotels in the
Galaxy
world.
Galaxy Hotel? I don't know.
One of the few places I've ever been in.
Five Seasons?
No.
Waldorf.
Really? Dude.
Okay.
You ever walked into the lobby of the Waldorf?
I've never passed by the Waldorf.
The next time, if you just
just walk in, act like I got a package or something like that?
This is 2007. We're not acting like we got a package. No. Jason and I, we got all dressed up, right? Shout out to Jam Master J.
Right, okay.
We got all dressed up. It was early in the morning. I could tell you the Michael Jordan beef story that started outside the hotel. But anyway,
okay.
So we go in, we're waiting for these two. I cannot think of the production company. They made a movie with Danny DeVito, like in the hub. But anyway, they were interested in the script. They mm-hmm. wanted to meet me because I wanted to direct. But I would have deferred just so Jason and I can get on because they knew he could make the music to make it pop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I kept pitching to him, you have to say you're ready to start music coordinating. Because Jam Master Jay is cool, but Jason Mizell can put music to these films.
Mm-hmm.
Not just me as a writer. I don't have the credits yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave us the meeting. We were like gassed. We got all suited up. Mm-hmm. And then he got killed. Mm-hmm. We went to LA and came back. They was like, let's have another meeting. And then
that was shortly thereafter.
Yeah. So... Wow. A few things fell apart, quite a few, when Jason got killed, because Jason Mizell, I was used to pitch to him, is taking the meetings. Jam Master Jay gets us the meeting,
right.
But he had success with a record label too, JMJ Records.
JMJ Records.
So we used to talk about Jason Mizell once we get the meeting. And so he started actually, he was coming to the fold like, yeah, the kind of money we're looking for to make the projects, not just to be paid, but the budgets to make the projects.
What it needs to be, right?
Right. Jam Master Jay can get us the meeting, but Jason Mizell has to close the door on the meetings. Mm-hmm. And it looked like we were making some nice, we were going to make Rap Life, I wrote a script with Latifah. Shout out to Dana, to Queen Latifah and Shaquem.
Okay.
We had a meeting with I think Latifah was in Miami or LA at the time, but Shaquem, we went to meet Tommy Silverman. This was going to be their first movie. The money was in escrow. I was gassed. I don't think I ever said this before, even to my friends, right?
Okay.
The money you had, Tommy Silver was like, it's $1 million, don't worry about it. This is my first movie. Guess when the next meeting was?
When's that?
September 13th.
2001.
September 11th hit.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you, obviously, people, it was a catastrophe. People lost their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I was doubly hit. I remember coming from the gym in the morning, being on the phone with Jason, crushed.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even, almost a second level of despair.
Right.
And then, you know, after that, like I said, he wound up being killed. But shout out to Shaquem, too. Shaquem was like, all right, I'm going to let you direct this movie. You're going to bring this home. He was like, I got you. You wrote this. I can see. You understand what's supposed to happen.
And Rap Life. What movie was this now?
Rap Life.
Rap Life. Okay.
Did
it ever come out?
Guy like a Hova, like a Jay or Eminem is on his third album.
Okay.
He meets this kid one day at the bodega. The kid is super nice. He kind of like is spitting at him, but the kid is outside pitching Blue Tops. And so the girl that's with Dutch, his name is Dutch. She tells it's Dutch,
blue
yo.
Blue Tops of crack.
Yeah, the blue, you know, long 032 blue vials. Okay. And so, but you could tell kids respect this kid. Even older kids that come, they don't even approach the rapper because they know this kid is dangerous.
Right.
So she tells Dutch, give this kid a shot. This kid is nice. He's like, shut up. She's like, oh, you mad because he might be as nice as you because you got a Benz and a record deal? So he slides back and gets the kid's number. He sends some cash. Yo, it's going to kill me because I can't remember the kid's name. I think his name was Babette. He was like, go send some kids to Brooklyn on Flatbush and find this kid Babette. His girlfriend, I think she was Jamaican. Her name was Nunu. He goes with some girl named Nunu. I heard him tell Nunu on the phone, yo, I'm coming home in a little while. Long story short, one of the villains actually was Black. Black had a bullet in his face, but it was attached to a nerve. So every time you saw Black in the film, the bullet, the lump, was someplace else, under the eye, on the forehead, because it was attached to a nerve that they couldn't remove.
So you must know someone that...
No. We was trying to get 50 to play Black, because he had the physique and demeanor, and Jay was like... We'll bring 50 on as a producer. I hadn't met 50 yet.
Okay.
Obviously, he's exploded because now he's producing and direct. I don't know if directed, but so the night Jay got killed, I was with Michael Williams from The Wire in the studio.
Okay.
Cutting a record. Omar was going to be a rapper. We got permission from HBO to start cutting songs on him. And Sha Money is this guy's name.
Slow down. Wait. So Michael K. Williams... When did The Wire come out?
I can't call it.
But like, is it 02, 03, or?
I think it was on the radio. Jay died. Oh, no, I had to be before that.
So you said you got permission from HBO to do records with him.
Mike got permission. I forgot the woman's name, if I'm not mistaken. She was the VP of HBO in LA. Mm-hmm. We FedExed not once but twice. It used to cost $50 or $60 to FedEx a CD the next day. We lost a set and had to FedEx two different. So it was like $150, $200. Whoever listened called back and told Mike, go ahead, let's hear what they sound like.
Okay.
So we had a few songs. And then, you know, things didn't, you know, I started getting more writing work.
Okay.
He obviously, you see where he's at, and then Jay got killed. But Omar had...
Yeah, bars.
Yo, dude, you...
Yeah, bars.
It was G, okay. For real.
Okay. So, when Jay died, did you also go into a professional depression? Like, did you stop working for a while? Did you go even harder? How did you deal with it professionally as far as... Cause, you know, Jam Master Jay got the meetings, you might as well close them. So where were you left at after that as far as pushing yourself forward?
Yeah, I'm almost sure. It's funny that you mentioned that.
You know if I record with Instagram, do you?
I kind of think... Yeah, there's no doubt it was depression, more so because what we were building... Mm-hmm. Was taking flight, not the money, because that we never even talked about that. He was Jam Master Jay, I was Derek DiPregio, and we talked about what kind of moves we could make so that we could finally start seeing the films we wanted to see. Yes, I had written a few hood pieces, some urban lit, but I didn't always want to see the crack and you killed my man. You see the stories that I'm giving you.
Yeah. Very complex.
Right. Anything, yeah. I thought there was a certain texture that as I got better, I could address and make it shine in an urban light. And he was with me.
Right.
If I would say, Jay, let's go talk to Russell, he'd call me in 2 days and say, Russell said, come have lunch. I talked to Russell a few times. He said, I'm going to get something for you. Right. Actually, I'll tell you about that later. So it made sense, Vic, but I wasn't a name.
Right.
Luckily, I wound up being, shout out to Jeff Clanigan at Cold Black Media. Most Def, aka now Yasin Bey, he read a script called Jeff Came Home that I wrote. Mm-hmm. And he called Jeff Clanigan at Cold Black. Jeff came to New York. I forgot what hotel it was. Might have been a W or something. Sat with me. He optioned a couple of scripts for me. He commissioned me for two. You know, the money was, you know, Jeff was on point. Jeff Clanigan kind of taught me a few things about perception and reality versus how black people think films are made. And what the duties of an executive are.
Can you speak about that, like, as far as your perspective of how we think films are made and how they are not made?
Well, if you listen from... Jeff Clanigan is basically that guy now. To me, at that point, I didn't know a lot about him, but I saw the few times that I talked to him, and I think I went to his office twice in L.A., he already had an idea what was supposed to happen. He didn't just sign you to sign a script. He had an idea how the film was supposed to get made, and that impressed me. You need teamwork. Hmm. It is super difficult to get black people to form a team. Do you see these young Asian, white, and Latino groups form to make a film? Hmm. When it's 100 Indians, I mean chiefs, and no Indians. We don't want to pool our resources. We've got to intellect and the ability, but one person can't be trying to scam the people out the money. You can't be. You've got to administer the kind of nurturing to each other so we can all rock.
Right.
You get a few groups that do it. You get a few groups that do it. But if we follow that blueprint and stop complaining about who's not helping us, we have to help us first.
Right.
And so as we grow, hopefully, you know, the maturation process positions us to say, you know what, let's come on. We can do this. And then somebody say, well, make the whole movie or make another film. It's not you wake up in the morning and jump on YouTube. That might happen if, you know, God is on your side and just somebody luckily sees that, but that's not how it happens.
Right.
That's not how it happens. And Jason, Russell, Jeff Clanigan, Julio Caro, Gingy Rochelle is a producer. She just produced Imperial Dreams, if you watched that on Netflix.
That was dope. I think I saw you write about that. That was a dope movie.
She taught me. Gingy used to be like, listen, I met on the set of Above the Rim. I was a signatory, but I co-wrote some of that. I was like a small fry out of the way, non-union. Some Pac was alive. You get to see whether you catch on or not, all of these experiences help you learn. And you see mentally the picture first. You digest the information. Now, what you come up with after that is on you. I've been fortunate because I wrote and it put me in the company of the people. I always wanted to make the film. The script is easy. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to make, I had some much bigger ideas, but I knew in order to really be a functional filmmaker, I needed resources and some time. I didn't have time for film school really, because obviously I was grown and I had bills. And
you feel like you needed film school after all your experience? Because you made your first feature film maybe a couple year and a half ago.
Yeah, but I had written I don't think I've sold a dozen, but if it might be close to a dozen scripts. Mm-hmm. I had options, maybe 10 or 20 option ideas that mm-hmm. I didn't even flush the script out and got paid for. But film school could have helped me. I think my experiences helped me a little more, because though I am not the greatest, I feel like I'm one of the better writers in the world, not in the Bronx or Harlem or New York. I just haven't got the seasoning from seasoned producers.
Okay.
Writers all say we're great, but when you've got a seasoned producer who knows he can get your films made, and they've seen from tentpole to urban lit to gangster genre to comedies, somebody can help you put a polish on it. And sometimes it's not even a great script and it gets made.
So they can put a polish on it, like they look at your script and like, okay, well, if you want to sell it, you need to maybe have a character.
Selling it is one thing. I want to get it made. How do we get this made? Okay. See, that's what I'm talking about. Selling it is cool. I've done that more than enough times. There are instances where I've sold probably I haven't gotten the money that other writers got, but I was more than satisfied at the time. Plus, if you really look at it, I'm still in an embryonic stage in terms of writer, because I stopped
after all these years
to direct, and other things popped up for me. But I loved when the Russells and Clannigans and Gingy's not the exec they are, but she's a producer. These people teach you what the networks are like, who's who, the
television networks, or just like the industry.
A couple of good friends, Yasin Bey, most, he used to kick it with me about who the execs were, whose word was good, what lines to follow. Yasin, he had precise ideas on what should happen to make a film. He even gave me a letter of intent before to make a film. Wood Harris, a couple of guys, they really understood, because they were already in the mix, and they would tell me, I like this, we're gonna meet these people. See, that's when you're getting a shot. When actors and other directors are teaching you the ropes and taking you to meet producers, because that's how you get a film made.
So when did you make the transition from Jam Master Jay got the meeting to, yo, what's up, this is DP, or this is Derek Purgeon, and you got your own meetings?
That took a while, because I just didn't have the energy. When Jason got killed, I don't want to say misery, but that's what it was. I remember being in the funeral. I don't think too much shocks me, to be honest. I'm like a transparent numb. Like, you can see it if it hurts, it just really doesn't. But that was the beast thing.
Right.
Because it was like, who walks in a room and bodies, like, you know what I mean? He didn't have a chance to run or move, I still to this day, like, and we talked about everything. Sometimes we'll argue for a week straight. And
but you would never think to harm him or nothing like that.
I've been with him when people used to argue that he was giving too much. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of the same way. If you know me, I try to give my word. If I'm going to be there, if I'm going to make it, if I got you, if I'm going to pay for it, if I don't have it, give me a second. So we connected because we were both givers. Mm-hmm. And, at the time, Jay had a few money issues, government that he was fixing. But when he would share in a minute. And I remember several people around him complaining that you're giving too much. And I started feeling like that too. Like, Jay, take care of yourself a little bit. Just, just in the pretext that if you straighten yourself up a little, you can breathe a little easier. But he was his kind heart, super, super giver, you know what I mean, of his resources, time, and energy. And
what with you? But when did you, you know, when did you spring out of that and say, you know what, I got to make these calls myself now, and I don't have Jay to help me with
actually,
that?
You know what? I think I saw Hype. I saw Hype Williams on West 4th Street. And I was getting a little depressed because I was actually going to my lawyer's office, but it was going towards where Russell used to live. And I felt myself, you know, the gap right there on West 4th? No, that's West 8th. Mm-hmm. You get up the train station.
Where Discorama was, which just closed down, yeah.
What's it called?
Discorama was a record store on 8th Street and 6th Ave.
Yeah, that was across the street, though, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And I felt like the energy leave me, and Hype, I saw Hype. Mm-hmm. We started kicking it for a minute. I didn't even know he knew I knew Jay, but it wasn't a big thing. And I told the blah, blah, and he said, keep doing it. You know, but he said it so plainly. It wasn't a gag. He just said, yo, well, keep doing it. We hadn't seen each other. And it wasn't like I knew him there. He was a super friend, but we would speak because we had that meeting before. He said, yo, keep doing it. Don't just stop. You know, you got to, it doesn't mean you stop. And I was like, yeah, you know, but I wasn't really paying attention. My mind was a flurry. He said, yo, you. Then he stopped again and turned and said, yo, dude, no, seriously, keep doing it. I forgot what he was working on. I think at the time he told me Speed Racer or something.
Okay.
He was getting ready to, he wasn't sure. I was supposed to call him. But he had a lot of things on his mind, too. He said he was just trying to walk before people kept blowing up his phone. We both were talking about that. But he was mad cool. He was just by himself. No, he was he was the demigod of videos at the time. But he just was, he was walking. I was walking. I said, I'm going to see my lawyer. It was a 3 or 4 minute kick it. But he stopped again and said, yo, seriously, don't stop. And so I decided, all right, I'm going to start, you know, let me see what kind of relationships I can nurture. And I have a friend, kind of a business partner, John Gilstrap. He found D'Angelo. He kind of pulled me up by the bootstraps, too. I was like, let's go. And Mike Williams. Mike started supporting me, like, yo, keep writing. He grew in stature. Mm-hmm. He turned me on, introduced me to Boris Kojo and some other guys that bought scripts from me. We developed relationships. You know, it didn't always jump out.
What's the emotion with selling a script or optioning a script, but then it doesn't get made? Because you're obviously thankful.
The writer is the low man on the totem pole.
Right.
Once I buy your script, I may not even call you back. I might not even accept your calls, mm-hmm. Right? When everybody's talking about Vic sold a script, you know it's over, though. If you're lucky, nobody has to rewrite it, and you actually get to see your name in the credits. Mm-hmm. If not, you might have bought the rolly,
okay.
Get your mom some bread, your girl, right? And then it's over.
And then, so there's an emptiness. In the phone, it's like you finish eating. It's like, damn.
Well, I had a decent lawyer, so I had rewrites on a couple. They didn't get made, but I got paid again.
Okay.
Gingy, Rochelle again. She kind of schooled me on what to expect. Actually, she helped me get. I know I gave her a little bread too. She helped me get 2 scripts commissioned. So it was a learning process.
Right.
But when you write it, expect the boot.
Okay.
It was a couple I turned down because I didn't like. I am the first man to transcribe a Donald Goins book from book to screenplay.
Okay. Which one was that?
Crime Partners.
Okay.
You ever saw that?
With Tyrone Turner and
Ice-T and Snoop.
You did that?
I should have tried to direct it, but I didn't.
But you wrote that?
Yeah, I transcribed it.
It was
a book. I transcribed it from book to screenplay.
So you wrote that. In my language, you wrote the screenplay.
Right, I wrote it. I wrote the screenplay.
So do you? What are my guests who don't do their the IMDb? You don't do that stuff.
I do. I'm on there. Okay. I don't know if that one had a few sticky legal troubles with the FitEds. Okay. So I didn't. My name is on there. If you look on the.
But as far as because you, I don't think I ever looked you up before. I know you was looked up the bull. But do you ever like go on your joint? Like, nah, they forgot above the rim on this. Let me add this in.
Well, I was a signatory. And sometimes on productions, you know, somebody had read a short I wrote called The Harlem Trilogy.
Okay.
That's how I met Gingy and Pac and a few people. But I wasn't that cat. So okay. If they're calling you 3 days, You just sit in the tent in the back for rewrites. You just keep your mouth, you know what I mean? You're not union, you just, they may not use you. Sometimes you get a day rate or something.
You don't be like, oh shit, first of all, it's 8:50. So let's move on a little bit. So, fast forward 10, 15, whatever years, I thought that was 8:30. All that writing, you do a documentary first.
It was an honor for Jay.
Okay. So you, obviously when someone leaves, you never get, but you still felt, you
compelled.
Know. Right.
The name of the documentary is Give It Up for the DJ. It is an ode and tribute to the DJs and how they've shaped the musical landscape. Jam Master Jay is who the film is dedicated to. Kid Capri, the world famous Brucey B. Shout out to Brucey B and Kid. DJ Chubby Chubb, Jazzy Jeff, DJ Iree. All the greatest DJs in the country. Actually, world. Japan, France.
Yeah, you had a lot of heavy hitters in there.
You saw the film.
Yeah. I didn't see the first 5 minutes.
It was a little late.
10 minutes. No, people had missed. Yeah, I thought I was late.
Yeah, you was a little late. You was with me the second time. How did you miss it? You was with me. You were with me.
Afterwards.
I mean, afterwards.
I saw the movie. I was early today, though. I was on time today.
So let me ask you a question.
What's up?
How do you feel about filmmaking? What is it? Mm-hmm. When your guests come in, how do you feel about where filmmaking is or should be?
I don't know. It's not a good answer. I don't even think about the trend or the cipher of filmmaking. I think about where I should be. I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know.
Well, I got a couple of new projects. I don't know if I could mention all of the two yet. We're still in.
But before, give it up for the DJ, because I saw it. But how do people?
I'm recutting a little bit and trying to add some songs that you recognize.
Okay.
So and
you
I'm
pay for some little licensing.
Right, some licensing deals in play, but it got great reviews from The Source, Revolt. I had incredible write ups.
I brought you the Source guy, I think. Choppy?
Did you write it for The Source?
No, I brought him.
Yeah. I had some really good write ups, blah, 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 but I got to add some music.
Okay.
You know, so that's what it is.
Yeah,
now.
Man, it's impressive. I think there should be some more screenings.
Yeah, know? But I'm going to cut it a little neater. I'm a better editor now. Even though it wasn't horrible, I was sort of rushing because it took me so long to make the film. I knew I was killing it if somebody didn't see it. Sometimes you just have to know when to put the baby
right.
in the stroller. You can't hold the baby forever. And it was good. It got me other work. It got me an incredible career. Cause right now, I teach television and film. I have a group after-school program called the Film Club. Shout out to Principal Lorenzo Chambers at PS279 in Canarsie, Brooklyn. Shout out to Principal Delise Jones.
I'm glad we didn't curse. Got the principals listening.
Glad right. No cursing. Shout out to Principal Delise Jones at the Joseph Wade Academy, 117X in the Bronx. My program is exploding all over. If you look at Dominant Pictures, .com, you'll see the short films I've shot with the fifth or eighth graders. Incredible. I'm going to do a Caribbean cartoon version in two schools in Brooklyn.
Are you Caribbean?
No, but the schools that I were in, they didn't seem to be getting a fair shot. The Caribbean kids used to talk to me, and they used to tell me, you're not Caribbean, but you understand. I'm like, well, a lot of my friends from BK are Jamaican and Haitian and Trinidad, But because of their accents, they didn't always get a break.
And so, that's why I answer your question now. Filmmaking needs to open up to the Caribbean. And Caribbean need to step up to filmmaking.
Why didn't it happen after Shatta's? Because that was the one that should have...
Shatta's didn't really come out, though. It was bootleg,
so
heavy.
Did it come on cable?
Not that I know. I seen the bootleg, and that's it. I heard there was another version. I seen the version where there were black cars. Mike Tyson's going to be here, but... It didn't really pop. I was young. I don't do bootlegs anymore because I support, you know.
So when are we going to make a film? What are we waiting on? Because I call you. I try to take you to lunch. You giving me the old.
They shouldn't.
I'm in Paris.
Now I know it. Hold
I'm
on.
I'm flying
now,
to Neptune. Hold on. Meet me on the sun.
I had to go to Neptune. You don't. I know the Neptune. Now I know that your lunches is real. You talk about Waldorf Astoria. Because, I mean, people say stuff. And it's like, he don't want to come to Brooklyn. But, I mean, you know, but this is 3 months in the making.
Yeah.
Super Bowl, you're supposed to be here.
You know what? That's my fault. Pittsburgh Steelers were playing.
That was a good game. I was here, and we left at 9 o'clock. And, goddamn, we left at 9 o'clock. And it was, you know, it was third quarter, so it was a blowout.
Yeah, it was. It was. I was heated, too. And I got stuck with a $220 bill.
Well, yeah, this is
at the restaurant.
And here you get water.
Paying for shots and Heinekens, and I don't even drink. But it was somebody that hired me, and I wanted to let them know, hey, man, I appreciate you. Right. You took you jumped out on a limb. You climbed out on a limb and hired me. He didn't even know. But he's become a good friend.
There's a Jamaican, he's a DP and a director. I forgot his name. But he's great. I want to work with him one day. But yeah, it's about to be open. They need to let them. All right, boom.
I want to give a quick couple of shout outs, right? To the superstar wife and executive producer, yes.
Your wife? Okay.
Denise Phillips. She is AKA the boss.
Shout out to the boss.
She gave me permission to come down tonight.
Thank you, Denise. Finally letting him come down
tonight. The greatest, one of the greatest producers in the country, really? Jean Sly.
Did you met her?
She's a financial analyst.
Y'all both together, y'all.
No, she's a financial analyst, but now she reads scripts. She script supervises. Nice. Like she's the AKA the boss.
Oh, so I can give
she
you
understands
a
film. She see me edit. She can tell me the color's too bright. I don't like this part in the script. Nice. A woman wouldn't say that, you know.
Okay.
Akil Davidson, AKA Plus from Rex.
Okay.
He's another great music mind. He's producing. We're working on two films: Mañana, 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 and hopefully. Either Just Came Home or The Trap, which somebody got to introduce me to Jeezy, please.
I have my guy, someone I'm working on the film with now, you know, we're producing the Yusuf Hawkins documentary, and he did the Trap or Die documentary for Jeezy, so maybe he still has a little.
Yeah, I'd like to have a conversation with him, so that'd be hot, but.
Okay.
I don't understand.
Muta Ali, you know Muta Ali. From Knife, do we say Knife anymore? The boy, Ruby D's grandson, the tall, light-skinned, bald dude from the meetings, from, never mind.
Oh.
The listeners know, he was here.
But Damien Long, my sister, the best bakery in the country, Heavenly Crumbs, dude.
Where is that? Is it in the Bronx?
No, in Brooklyn.
Oh, I'm about
right
to say.
Champ, let me tell you.
Where is it at?
Food Crack. 320. Oh boy, she's gonna kill me. I'm not gonna say the wrong act. Heavenly Crumbs.
Heavenly Crumbs.
You can't beat it.
I'm about to Google Heavenly Crumbs.
If you don't come home one night,
bring your wife.
You
selling ad space on my show? Tell them.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. No, I'm gonna get her to send you some
producer.
No. I'm gonna get her.
I'm
gonna get her to send you some stuff. Then you'll be like, okay. She's gonna bring you some cakes and cupcakes. Then you'll see how serious.
If you want to produce a commercial for, you throw it for free with some cake. Yeah, Franklin and Lot.
No, but you're right because I'm a big proponent of yes, just get paid for the ad space.
It's by the project. By
anybody
LG.
Else I didn't mention? My man Eddie Duran, Jonathan Duran. I just shot a trailer. Mañana, Mañana, Mañana.
Right, I've seen.
You read the script.
And
you didn't come. I asked you to be part of, but you know I'm a small fry.
I was on
fry.
Neptune. Don't do that. I'll be on.
You
Neptune.
Wasn't back from Neptune yet.
I'd be on
the
Neptune.
Space shuttle wasn't back yet.
Underestimated. I'd be out.
You know what it is? We should support each other because I've seen people make films with a team and it grows and then they're working forever. Mm-hmm. That's really what I'm trying to do. Find the best people, the dedicated. Super shout out to Stoney, aka the unicorn looker for her. She came through and kind of partially. Casted, directed.
She's good casting. She's great casting.
And kind of AD for me.
Yeah.
She brought the estrogen so I could work with the actresses. Okay. She was a balancing. Super shout out, Stoney. I got mad love for you. It's great to have kind of like woman AD too to help because you know you got women. I had the absolutely gorgeous Tasneema Hakim play Lolo for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And she rhymes.
Yes.
Yeah.
She spits acid.
Yeah,
even though she doesn't call me enough so that we could work. But, you know, she's back in the country.
She's
maybe
probably on
me.
Saturn.
Right.
But you put her there.
Yeah, so that's it.
So how do they find you, Dominant Pictures?
Dominant Pictures, I'm on Facebook.
And
Derek Pridgen. P-R-I-D-G-E-N. The email is dominantpictures, @AOL.com.
All right, we got like 11 seconds. So, I mean, it's whatever.
And keep your head up. Film is everywhere. Black film coming. Dominant Pictures. Shout out to my man, Tim Neal. Family First Entertainment, somebody else I'm working with.